And our last speaker of this session is Jane Munro. She's come all the way from Australia just to speak to us today. Jane tells me that she plays trombone really well, no, but she didn't bring that with her, unfortunately. So today, instead, she's going to talk to us about some of the rheumatological things we see in children.
Thanks for having me here. I work at the Children's Hospital in Melbourne. I'm head of rheumatology unit there, and it has been a bit of a journey to get here, and of course the theme for Don't Forget the Bubbles is journey this year. And I think actually our past speakers, and in particular Siobhan, talked about the journey. And when I spoke to a lot of my colleagues at the Children's Hospital and colleagues in the community in Victoria, I was saying to them, what do you struggle with rheumatology? I'm going all the way to the UK and I want to know what do you want to hear about, you know? And I was in Madrid last week at the big adult and paediatric rheumatology conference, and I was asking people from lots of countries, you know, when you talk to your colleagues, what do they struggle with? And they go, they're scared of rheumatology. Yeah, and when you got introduced, you were like, yeah, we're scared of rheumatology. And so that's kind of what I've infused this. This is our rheumatology alphabet soup. I'm going to let you feast a little bit on rheumatology today. It's a little bit quick. I've given a longer version of this talk in the past. But the aim of today is to actually give you that idea of the journey and your role. So Siobhan gave you that first 60 minutes. And what I want you to think about is your role in ED or as a general paediatrician or where you fit in the healthcare system. Is it is so important for rheumatology. You have all the skills. But to be thinking about when you see a child, you need to be so thorough, okay? And that you really need to be documenting and thinking what they might have or what they might not have and document that throughout, where they fit in the journey and where you might fit in the journey. You don't have to nail the diagnosis then and there. And in fact, you often may not. In fact, I may often not, okay? Because often these are got a prodrome or they've got a long evolution. And also what I want you to think about is that you might actually be the give it the hand and contain this, because you've got kids that are presenting, 95% of the kids that present to our outpatients, and we're a predominantly ambulatory specialty, are presenting with pain, yeah? And they're presenting often to us, and they've been in ED many times, and they've been to general paediatrics, and they're going to the pain service, and they've gone to gastro, and they're going to cardiology, or whoever, right? And they've got very, very real pain, and we have to stop them at some point presenting to healthcare, and we have to give them a lead clinician, and we have to explain that pain. And we are crap at doing that a lot of the time, right? I'm not crap at that. I'm very good at that, actually, because I have done pain training. I'm not always good at it, but I have made that like my mission to be very good. That means I get a lot of that, unfortunately, now. But I am proud that I have spent a long time working on that. But it's something that we need to be better at. I have not got the clicker, so I will get the clicker. I have a photo from downstairs, and the photo is of me doing operation in the, has a look on my face of a little bit of fear and disgust, which is often a little bit of like worry that you guys have when you see someone with potentially something complex, rheumatological or chronic pain, or you're not quite sure. That's also when I see eye stuff, yeah? So that was my. and so there is absolutely 0% chance of me cutting open that eye like you had. 0%, I would be calling a friend. So I want to say rheumatologists love being called, generally. And I have to say, generally, we don't get called in the middle of the night. So thank you, everyone in emergency around the world, for mainly not calling us in the middle of the night. If you call us in the middle of the night, we know it's serious. Generally, also, when we're called and it's serious, we've also got steroids. So that is a good thing. We're not very imaginative. And you know we've got steroids, and you know we're going to say that. One of the things I think is that, and I'll get to it on a later slide, is that I do want you to think of yourself as being relentless in your detective work with rheumatology. And a lot of specialties, when you see someone present with cough, you're going to focus on respiratory system, yeah? But with rheumatology, it is really head to toe. It is every system, yeah? Now, we have obviously some very clear connective tissue disease symptoms that we ask, and we actually ask for all the new presentations. You know, they're coming in, it might be with a rash or it might be with a sore finger. We actually ask about all of their joints, and we ask about sicca symptoms and photosensitivity, and we ask them about mouth ulcers. We ask them about all of these, and we are really, really thorough about all of those questions. But it is important for you. You may not necessarily cover all of the things we would ask in our initial rheumatological assessment, but when you are hunting down that rabbit hole of someone presenting in emergency or in a general paediatric clinic, you do need to be really, really thorough in listening to the story, and particularly if it's one of the first times that story is being told to you. So they've got 3 days of an arthralgia or arthritis, or it's the first time someone's presenting with fever, or it's the first time they're presenting with X, Y, and Z, and when you examine them, let that story wash over you. Let them talk. I mean, you've all probably heard that. You know, people only talk for a couple of minutes usually. We interrupt them within 17 seconds, literally. But let them tell you that story. And the reason I want you to do that is because you are often the first person that hears that. And especially for kids that get admitted, I go back and the ED people that take that thorough history, and mostly that is done very well, not always, but almost always, and document that really, really well. It's the purest one that I hear usually. It's documented really beautifully. And especially when then the system, the examination is done and documented really beautifully, that is so important. We go back and look at that many, many times to see what was there and what was not there at that point in time when we might be 2 weeks down the track, we're referred that patient and they're asking, oh, could it be rheumatological? And it might, and it's rheumatological. We go back and look back at the different points in contact of different teams and particularly in ED and who was seen at that point. And that's really important to us. So elephants in the room is one of the slides. And that comes up throughout. So elephants in the room. You all know this, right? Elephants in the room, really important. It is often the parent that has the elephant in the room. Now, for us in rheumatology, elephants in the room is a huge thing. There've often been a delay in diagnosis from when you've referred from ED or from a discharge or a general practitioner has referred to us. If they have stuck that into Google or you have told them something from ED, they have then sat in their smartphone or looked at it or they've heard the language they've used, they have got a huge level of underlying anxiety, and autoimmune diseases in families are often very common too. So there is a huge amount of angst that they come with usually that they've often built on with their own Google searching for sure. But there's also often things that they've held on to by the time they've got to us. And so there's often elephants in the room, particularly around pain. As I said, 95% of the presentations in rheumatology have pain. And that has a lot of things that I think bring with it, because it's as any of you that are parents and your child is in pain, it is a very distressing thing to see. Okay. So, letter A. So, 12-year-old girl, she's had 3 months of knee pain. It's progressively getting worse. It's bothering her every day. She has been a healthy girl otherwise, no major past history. There's a maternal aunt with lupus. She's now having to stop doing sports that she liked. She started year 7 at school. She's now mainly got pain that is during basketball and Australian rules football. It's, when you ask about it, really at the front of her knee. You can't see me right at the back, but I call it the smile. It's under her kneecap. When I hear the smile, I'm like, yes. I call it the smile. I'm like, they show me that. I'm so happy. And I'm hearing this history. It's end of the day. It's mechanical pain. It's only then. There's no morning stiffness. There's a bit of puffiness and joint swelling. There's nothing else. I examine her. All of her joints are normal, except for her knees, which are a little bit tender, around the patella. When I do apprehension tests, which is when I hold the kneecap and she forcibly contracts her quads, I'll show you this in a minute, it's a little bit sore, but there's nothing else. There's no synovitis, there's no arthritis, nothing else to find. Skin, nails, oral, etc., all totally normal. I'm very happy to see this. And she has patella tracking issues, so patellofemoral dysfunction or anterior knee pain. And this is very common. And if you think about toddlers that are toddling with the knees, legs apart, a bit more straight, middle childhood, and then as girls in particular, can happen in boys. As they get older, their pelvis change and their biomechanics are different, and their VMO muscle of their quads muscle, so their inner thigh muscle, is a little bit weaker, and their kneecap doesn't track as well, and it's being pulled outwards, and they get this knee pain. Very easy to treat. It doesn't have to be treated if it's not bothering them. Probably a whole heap of you in the room have had this. Annoying, you can ignore it. I get it when I start doing lunges at the gym. And you don't have to treat it. If you want to treat it, you can do the taping, you can see a physio, you can have a short burst of anti-inflammatories. You have to do boring VMO muscles. All right, boring, boring, boring. Don't fight with your parents. If you want to go to the physio and do the exercises, you can, and it'll get better. This kid's not doing sport and they're in year 7. There's some red flags, and send her off to physio, do some anti-inflammatories. It's better.
Children's Hospital in Melbourne has fantastic orthopaedic fact sheets if you want to look them up. This is the tracking. B. So, B, common things are common. Six-year-old boy, very, very well, happy, healthy, doing great. Parents are very distressed. Been sent in by his general practitioner. He started waking at night, 2 hours after going to sleep, screaming, waking the whole house, waking his younger brother, rubbing his calves, both of his calves, so distressed. Comes in, runs two or three times, and then goes away. And they think, okay, he must have been upset, not sure. Then fine for a few weeks, then runs five times in a row. And they've been to the GP twice, general practitioner. No one knows what's going on. He's otherwise well, he's not got a fever. Again, down their shin more. Seems to be more on the right than it's the left. And it's been going on like this on and off for 2 or 3 months. A little bit, a couple of times in the morning it's there, but it's not more for a couple of minutes. Some of you are nodding. I can see there's a number of head nods. You need to know this is paediatrics. This is a type of growing pain, benign nocturnal limb pain. As rheumatologists, when I get this, yes, so happy. This is my new slot. It's only going to take me a few minutes. But again, you stick this into Google, this sort of stuff, nighttime joint pain, nighttime bone pain. Woo! Parents are very distressed and worried. But again, Arthritis Australia hosts all of our Australian Paediatric Rheumatology Group handouts, and this has got this. And it's very easy to treat. You don't need to treat it, but if they're wanting some long-acting naproxen on the days when they've been really active and it's precipitated, that's the sort of thing that they can have, as well as some stretches that sometimes helps. It often runs in families. Again, I wasn't going to say this here. I wasn't sure whether in the UK this would be something that would be easily recognisable or not. Often in tall, thin girls, can happen at any age. Itchy fingers in the cooler months, often achy. We're often referred in about 2 months into autumn. In Melbourne, in the wet months, it's never there in the drought. It can be in the toes, it can be on the tip of the nose and the ears, but it's particularly fingers because they're exposed, especially in football players or outdoor netballers, and it's chilblains. D. Don't forget the bubbles. These are my kids from a couple of years ago. So this is to remind you to not to freak out. Don't over-investigate, okay? You've often got time. If you need to take blood, you can always store serum, yeah, and just do some simple bloods if you've got someone that you're actually doing some inflammatory markers on, for example. You don't need to do rheumatology blood serum rhubarb. You don't need to do that. It costs a lot of money and they are very, very, very rarely necessary. You don't need to do, you know, vasculitis screens. ANAs are not helpful for diagnosing juvenile arthritis, etc. Just don't do them unless you have a specific question that you're asking. Yeah? You can often store the serum or speak to a rheumatologist and then do them. If you have a high index of suspicion of connective tissue disease, do them. Do remember you have all of the skills to do this. I want to say, use all your magic ninja paediatric skills, all right? So I often say to kids, because when they don't, often I want you to examine all of their joints, and I've got to examine all their joints, yeah? So I'll be saying to them, let's work out the mystery of your body together, okay? Let's do it together, you know? Come on, Violet, let's work it out. It's so interesting. What's going on? This is so, and often they've seen a number of doctors by the time they've come to see me, Dr. James. I'm like, let's work it out. What's going on? Let's work it out. It's so fascinating. Come and show me. Yeah? And I do a lot of all the way through, right from the start. So you are the boss of your body, yeah? You are the boss of your body. So let's work it out. Show me. And I love that, yeah? I use it all the time. So procedural pain management was my PhD. So giving kids some autonomy over their body as much as I can. I use that phrase a lot. So as pediatricians, for those medical students or pediatric trainees in the audience, this is the stuff you have to really learn as the craft of pediatrics, is how to do the magic of pediatrics. So examine everything, yeah? You have to be a relentless detective and you have to examine everything. You don't have to do it in any particular order, but you have to be looking at all of this throughout the whole time when you think there might be something rheumatological going on. You might have to go back at different times. You have to look under their arms, their hairline for psoriasis. You're looking in their belly button. You're looking at their lymph nodes, all of their systems, and document that, okay? Please, please document positive and negative. So F. 14-year-old girl, achy all over. This is a very classic referral, Georgie Tiller. We get this every week. one of my rheumatologists from our team. So, 14-year-old girl, achy all over 6 months, getting worse, sore, headachy. She's got bad period pain for the past 2 years. She's starting to miss some school. Parents are very, very concerned. She was previously very high achieving, and things are not going very well for her. She's been thoroughly investigated. She'd had a bad infection about 6 months ago, and she's started to really start had lowered mood. She'd had a number of investigations, actually about 48. I can't remember them all, but it was thoroughly, thoroughly investigated, and she had an ANA of 1 in 320, okay? Very, very worried. There was a second cousin twice removed that has had lupus, and they are very concerned that she might have lupus. They've, in fact, looked it up. There's possibly she may have lupus. Have you heard that she might have lupus? So they are very worried. What does she have? F is for fear syndrome, fear of an elevated ANA result. I give credit to Angela Cox and our team who came up with this mnemonic. All right. This is really important because this is our standard referral, right? People do not understand that ANA is, you know, 10 to 15 to 20%, up to 20% after a viral infection. It is common, all right? Why are you ordering an ANA? Stop doing it unless you know what you're doing, all right? They're walking around with it. Kids have viral infections, it's going to be elevated. So it is scooping the net in the water of maybe they have a raised immune system. Why are we doing it? Okay, you got an Asian girl who's got mouth ulcers, who has got like a malar rash. Okay, order an ANA. The rest of the time, do not order an ANA. Stop like doing ANAs, okay? Because it is going to be positive some of the time, and then you're going to have to go, oh, now I've got to investigate and do more blood tests and explain to the parents what this, like, ANA is up. So my other slides had a, what do we do about it? We don't want you to do much about it. The only thing that we look into is if it's more than 1 in 640, so ANAs are titrated out. If they're in a high-risk category, strong family history, Asian female, for example, which put you in a higher category for connective tissue disorder, and the studies that show where you look at the nail folds, which is where, again, a little picture I had for you, where we look with the ophthalmoscope, they're the ones that have been followed to show that they're actually got a higher risk of ongoing risk of connective tissue disease. They're the ones that we might investigate. But you can just store serum. So you can do an ANA if you've got a high risk of having connective tissue disease and then go on and do further investigations. Otherwise, do not do an ANA. Google caused a lot of problem, and that's G is for growing pains. You need to know what growing pains are, like in terms of, you know, Osgood Schlatter's Sever's disease, achiness, yeah? 1 in 3 kids in the past 3 months will have some sort of musculoskeletal pain. You need to understand that as paediatricians. H, again, you need to know what is normal because, again, newborn, tie them in a knot, pretzel, they suck their toes, that is normal. By the age of about 7, they're not so bendy, yeah? And then 14-year-old boys, like, can hardly bend over to put their sock on. So there is a range of normal, and you need to know what it is as paediatricians. I love Seinfeld. Is it lupus? Okay, it's not lupus. All right, I refer you back to the letter F, fear syndrome, okay? J, I would be absolutely recalcitrant as a rheumatologist to not have something on juvenile arthritis, and I can show you all the different bits of things. This is my, like, rheumatologist red flag sign to say, if you see a swollen joint that is not settling down, especially over a few weeks, or joint stiffness in the morning or after a day's sleep, that goes on for more than 15 minutes, that is not normal, okay? This is not you old people that are like, getting up, okay, 15 minutes, that's probably abnormal too. But kids should not be stiff for more than 15 minutes, okay? You're seeing this, that's dactylitis, swollen joint, yeah? You can see this, and that's enthesitis at the back of the heel. That is all abnormal. And that is what kids used to be. And I had juvenile arthritis as a child, fortunately not as severely as that, and obviously my journey has led me here to London, and I ended up training as a rheumatologist. There's a lot of psychoanalysis there. And we now have incredible outcomes. So around the world, there is delays in getting to rheumatology and getting to rheumatologists around the world. In fact, in a lot of developing countries, there's hardly any paediatric rheumatologists. But even in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, UK, we've got real problems. So if you are at the front line and you see swollen joints, rheumatology referral, and pick up the phone and tell them because we will see them. Yeah, we want to know. And certainly if we get called by ED or paediatricians, we will see those patients. Okay, Kawasaki's disease. All I'm telling you here, because you're very good at recognising it, is that this guideline is fantastic. It's 2017 American Heart Association guideline. It is massive evidence-based. And it has all the evidence of, like, the tricksy things of what to do if you're failing through to first-line treatment. Yeah? It's very good. And this is to show you the phenotype and how complex it is so that when you're in emergency and you don't see this or you see it a little bit, yeah, or on the ward, you document it so that 2 weeks down the track they ring a rheumatology and go, maybe is it incomplete Kawasaki's? I can go back to your notes and go, hey, they said that they didn't have this or they did have a little bit, and I'll know, and you will have been really thorough, so thank you. LMNOP, not really, sorry. Limp. Again, limp is a whole one-hour talk. And I just want to flag that the big things here are that for the very young, for the ill and febrile, obviously, non-weight bearing, painful or immunosuppressed, you need to have a little guideline in your head. There are hundreds of guidelines on when to refer a child with limp. Limp is abnormal, always with a child, unless it's something they've always had, obviously, from a static orthopedic condition. Mimics. Don't get bitten on the butt, all right? So call, put your hand up and get asked for help, yeah? There are 10 things. Pain that is out of keeping with what you think they've got. If they are refusing to weight bear, symptoms that come and go, malaise or systemic upset, associated symptoms like weight loss or diarrhea, night pains, not the benign nocturnal limb pains, night pains that doesn't respond to simple analgesia, pain in bones, behavioural change, swollen joints and isolated hip. So we have this thing, beware the isolated hip. Yeah, you've got to look into it. Always consider age, sex and ethnicity. Always know the normal child too, yeah? Again, that theme of going back. P is from Prof Foster and her team in Newcastle in the UK, has PGALS, okay? So even if you don't know how every joint to be examined, PGALS is a nice screening system and there's now an app that you can put on your phone, okay? So it's a really good one that you can have. Q is quotidian fever for systemic arthritis. R is rash. And again, this is just to remind me to tell you, looking from head to toe in all these different hidden spots. S. These are my 5 things I ask every child in my clinic, and I ask them at every visit for anyone ongoing, because this is the things that kids have to do. School, sleep, because sleep is number one, sport, psychology, and social. Obviously, psychology is not an S. I'm getting away with that. I've said swollen joint and stiffness. Timing, I've talked about. You need to know the different ages and different presentations. Uveitis for eyes. V is for vaginal ulcers, okay, and thinking about, again, hidden spots. When to worry, make sure you call a rheumatologist. We will come and we will bring steroids. X-rays, don't forget. I think in general emergency, you guys use that really, really well. Your role, why is your role? And I've talked about that, yeah, how you fit in the path of these things. Make sure that you use that well. And of course, with Z, I can't use without mentioning, of course, there's always zebras. And once in your career, you're going to see a systemic sclerosis or something really unusual like a Wegener's, yeah? So think that's why you're being thorough, because you'll look in a mouth and a hard palate and you go, oh! Or you'll look at the fingers and you go, oh, sclerodactyly. Or you'll look somewhere and you go, oh, I remember that vaguely from med school. That's why you're looking head to toe, yeah? When there's that someone with, you know, achiness and malaise and something, you know, fatigue, and they're not just an achy 14-year-old girl. I hope today that you've got these elephants in the room. They've made you think about it. Hopefully, I've given you some ways to keep your head above the water or not to forget the bubbles. There's a number of, I guess, you know, if you like, these pearls and little red flags along the way in rheumatology. I think as a paediatrician, we've got this, we're curators, if you like. You know, I really feel this responsibility of from newborn through till, you know, the end of life. And I'm often saying to people, hey, you know what? I see you now as a 12-year-old, but I'm thinking of you as a 22-year-old and a 42-year-old and an 82-year-old. Yeah, I want you running around on those legs when you're 82 and carrying your grandkid and chasing them, yeah? And I really think that that is the joy of paediatrics, is that we've got this ability to be doing that. So that's my crew. down at the beach in Melbourne, not near Melbourne, Phillip Island, near Melbourne. I just wanted to thank the team, and particularly the Don't Forget the Bubbles crew, for inviting me over here. Hope you've had a hearty but fast feast on rheumatology. And thank you for the team, and I will finish up there.